You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.
Thank you so much for doing this today, Michael. It's an absolute pleasure. You're playing Paralelos y Chantados tonight. Maybe it's a sort of obvious question, but the concert is billed as Michael Rother plays Noi, Harmonia and solo works. So how do you choose what to play? I mean, that's like, you know, 60 years of music.
Yeah, I mean, some promoters in some countries like to present Noi in a special way, because in some countries Noi is the most famous, maybe in most actually. But I'd like to be fair, because maybe some people know the history of my bands, Noi and Harmonia. And Harmonia in the 70s was sort of rejected by the audience, and that always bugged me. And so when Harmonia got the recognition, and like 25 years later, when everything had already moved on, that gave me great pleasure. And since the re-releases on Grönland Records of the Harmonia catalog and special editions, this is great to add Harmonia to the name of the show. So it's Noi, Harmonia, and obviously I have so many solo works that I can choose from. Too many, actually. I should play, I don't know who is famous for playing the longest shows, like 5 hours.
Bruce Springsteen?
Yeah, it came to my mind. Yeah, I would join him in the last appearance supporting the American president.
So you mentioned Harmonia were kind of overlooked at the time. I mean, I wasn't around at the time. I got the impression, actually, that in Germany, at least, quite a lot of the bands that we now really worship from Germany at the time, including Noi, including Harmonia, but all, you know, the other bands, actually, in their home country, didn't quite get the respect they did in other places. Is that right?
I can't speak up for other bands. I never really paid so much attention. I think Faust was more famous in Britain, and Noi was also quite successful comparatively in Britain. And as I later heard from talking with Brian Eno and David Bowie, those people were listening to the music when in my world, because it was very limited, without internet, without knowledge of what was happening outside of our little village, it was not known to us. But maybe it is a cultural thing, because Germany traditionally looks towards British music and American music, which is all fine with me. I love Little Richard. And so, I mean, my brother was 10 years older and I grew up with his rock and roll parties, Elvis Presley and Little Richard and Fats Domino. I still love these guys, especially Little Richard, actually. His story is so impressive as a gay black person in the South of very conservative, not very gay-friendly USA in the 50s. It's so amazing, the energy and the answer he gave in the music to this repression and this nasty climate of, what was the question? Sorry, I got carried away.
I think the question, well, I think you've sort of answered it. It was about, okay, like how much acclaim and respect you got in Germany, basically, when, okay, you know, in the 1970s.
Yeah, Noi was actually a moderate success. Actually, from my point of view, it was an amazing success, being a poor boy after doing conscientious objective work in the hospital instead of going to the military, serving in the military, and dropping out of university because I realized that this was just not my path. It never stood a chance. All my interest in psychology, which is basically still active, but it doesn't stand a chance against music, my love for music. And so, yeah, that was the story.
One thing I've always loved about your music, and the music of a lot of your peers from that time, was how incredibly free it sounded, how sort of inspired and free. How did you manage to sound that free?
It was not, in our case, not the result of some smart thinking about a concept that would revolutionize music. It was just the idea of dropping the copycat mentality with which I'd grown up. I mean, like, I was 13 when we returned to Germany, and the British bands of the time, Beatles, Kings, Stones, etc., they just were the greatest thing on earth for me and us. And so I joined a band, and I was for years happy to just come as close. I was probably not even successful with that, but just trying to sound like Eric Clapton or George Harrison or the Beatles as a whole. And in the late 60s, when I finished school, and I mean, my personality, I guess, grew up a bit, and I became aware of being unhappy of being a copycat and not wanting to go down that path anymore. That led me into an open space, because I really decided to drop all the cliches, all the way of trying to play fast licks on the guitar. Everything, I just gave order to my fingers not to do this, what I had learned, you know, over the years. And but where to go? And that was the crisis I think I had in this, like, 70, 71, early 71. But early 71 already, fate chose to lead me to the Kraftwerk studio, which a band I didn't know of that existed. The band name sounded really silly to me, Kraftwerk. Oh, very funny. And yeah, things took a big turn then.
That's funny, because I have long thought that a lot of band names aren't very good. But Kraftwerk, for me, is always one of the best band names. Maybe it's because I'm not a native German speaker. For me, it sounds like a very good band name. Neu as well is a very good band name.
Yeah, it's true. Neu, I actually wasn't happy when Klaus Dinger and I thought of being a duo after we split from Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk or Kraftwerk. We discussed a few names. I didn't have many ideas, really. And he proposed Neu, and I said, oh, but that's so cool. It was cold, actually, even. And he had this this point of view or point in his favor. He said, well, this is something that will help our album cover stick out in the front, in the record shop, which it did. And I remember walking through Düsseldorf, Old Town, the amusement area, which had many record shops at the time. And there were, you could see the Neu album being presented in the window. And so I said, I agreed to the name. And looking back, I'm happy to confirm that Klaus was right. It was smart, it always stays new, the word neu. And my objection, my feeling that it was too, I don't know, too assuming, too neu, this is ah. It's also a claim, you know, like it comes from advertisement world where every stupid article that is thrown on the market gets this big tag, it's neu, it's new, so it must be good. But yeah, Klaus was right and his artwork was also spot on. Yeah, the names of other bands, Kraftwerk, we already discussed, Harmonia was actually a joke because Rudelius Möbius and I, as much as we enjoyed working together and being together, it was especially a struggle between Möbius, who was unfortunately, he cannot defend himself, but I love the guy and he's with me in my thoughts many times. He died 11 years ago and I called him lazy. I was furious because he refused to join me in my attempts at adding more structure to the live music. Harmonia music sometimes consisted of us searching for an hour, 1.5. In the meantime, the audience went away or fell asleep or just started talking and smoking, and I wasn't very happy with that. And I thought, instead of, I must go one step back. One thing that happened after, in one concert, the first concert we played semi live for friends of the place where we lived, that was us searching for 1.5 hours and listening to the recording of the whole 1.5 hours. They were so friendly, these people. They didn't talk. They just sat on sofas and thought, I don't know what these guys are looking for, but it doesn't seem they're finding it. But the 5 minutes in which we really came together led to the recording of the track Ohrwurm on the first Harmonia album.
A classic.
It's a classic, and that is pure magic. So I know this was a discussion, especially between Möbius and me, how to not give up the aspiration, the hope of getting some magic, but also preventing the search for running for an hour or longer. And this was something that we struggled along. And so when we thought of a name, it was Haha, Harmonia. And then we had in Germany, these vocal groups, old traditional vocal groups, often called themselves Harmonia something. And we had this, I don't know how you call it, like a flag. It was not a flag, but it had the name Harmonia Ottenstein on it. And we had it in our house for some reason. I don't know how it ended up in the house. And so we looked at it and said, oh, Harmonia. Yeah, that's good.
Talking about Harmonia, I read an interview in which you talked about how, well, with Neu as well, you had very little in terms of studio equipment and machines. In fact, you were so poor you had to reuse tape. Do you think, in a way, that forced you to innovate, not having everything?
Yeah, of course, evaluating the psychological situation, it's clear that you are forced to focus more if you have limited supplies. Rudelius does that. I don't know how he does it these days, but back then we were so poor. Really, there were hardly... And tapes were so expensive. You can't imagine 56 Deutschmarks for one tape of Revox, good high-quality tape. And so you had to be very focused, whether it really helped us in the end or whether we were sometimes also just lucky to find ideas when we were forced to, like in the studio with Noi, when we had limited hours in the professional recording studio because we didn't have more money and we wanted to be independent from a record company. I think the approach of many bands was, we go with a demo to a record label and they will give us a budget, but then they give you a worse contract. So in our case, we said, and then they will maybe interfere with your choices. And so our position was, we will record something and then we'll take the tape and present it to the record label and say, this is what you get, this is what we have.
Yeah.
And no discussion. Or like in Peaky Blinders, no discuss. Do you know that?
Yeah. So given that now, is the opposite true nowadays? Do you sometimes worry that you've got too many things and too many sounds and too many machines?
Yeah, actually that changed when my solo albums, starting in 1977, were the opposite of Harmonia in regards to popularity. Suddenly, everybody was buying my records, solo albums, yeah. And so I was in the position in 1979 to fulfill the dream of most musicians to have all the professional gear I wanted. So 24 track like Connie Plank and a nice mixing desk and a Dolby set and crazy, crazy sum of money. But it's like a carpenter, you wanted to own your own tools. And that was my attitude to having that gear. And that led to having an unlimited supply of time in the studio. That was a totally different, actually also a challenge, you know. But I remember in the late 70s and the 80s, I was totally content in having that time in the studio available whenever I wanted to. And when the machines worked, sometimes they didn't work. And then it was chaos because I had no idea of how to do the repairs. People had to drive from Hamburg, a technical team. The answer to the question, you had to cope with other challenges, not the limited time, but the unlimited time, and what that changes to your focus and your decision making. Because in 1985, Klaus Dinger and I met again, and we decided to give it another try after he did La Düsseldorf and I did my solo albums. And at that time, he had studio gear and I had my studio. And so we had unlimited time, and that was not helpful at all for Klaus Dinger and me. And I remember, I shouldn't put the blame on him. I was probably also quite stupid. We discussed about, my mix is 1/3 of a dB louder than your mix. A totally ridiculous discussions, but maybe it was also a power play. But we don't have to finish the album tonight because tomorrow there's a new band in the studio. That prevented decision making, and I think that prevented us from reaching the point of, okay, letting go. This is now what we have and let's put it out. So yeah, but again, this is like complaining about having a splendid breakfast every day. You shouldn't do that.
So how do you now know then when a track is finished?
I think there's not one answer that's always true. Sometimes it just feels right. Like there's nothing that nags you when you think of the track, and it feels balanced, and all the elements are there that you thought you wanted to present with that idea. And I think it's really, that's the challenge, to decide to let go, because nowadays with computers and hard disks, and it's even more limitless, because the reels of 24 track, the 2-inch track, the tape, they were so expensive. I think 300 Deutschmarks for one tape. And so back then, okay, I didn't mind so much, but nowadays for 300 euros you could buy tons of hard disks and just never release anything, just keep on working.
Bringing things up to the present day, your most recent solo album, I mean by yourself, there's one with Vittoria more recently, but was Dreaming, the title track of which I think is one of the most beautiful things you've done.
Dreaming, the title, I see, yes, okay.
It's a lovely song.
Wonderful, yeah, I'm happy to hear that.
How do you keep being inspired after these years?
There's no guarantee that you will stay inspired, really. I mean, it's a big word, try to be humble. Just accept that sometimes nothing comes that appeals to you. That has always been the case, as far as I look back. Sometimes you turn on a machine, a synthesizer, or play on the guitar, and you think, oh, that's boring, and that's boring, or oh, I've done that before. And at other times, you think, oh, but that's an interesting sound, and I should memorize this, and then, oh, these harmonies are great. They're also wonderful. So I don't know where it comes from, and I think maybe I wouldn't want to know. If I had the choice, like, choose now, you will always know when you're going to be inspired or not. Maybe I'd say, oh, no, keep surprising me.
You mentioned you played Primavera in 2010 as Hallo Gallo with Steve Shelley and Aaron Mullen. How was that?
It was great. Playing with Steve Shelley, such a powerful drummer. I mean, I've had Klaus Dinger as a drummer.
Yeah, you've had some powerful drummers.
But I think the kit of Steve Shelley was even louder. And I remember I had to wear in-ears, which I didn't like, because he just killed everything on stage. He's an amazing drummer, really, to such a strong machine. And Aaron was also... I met him last year when we were in USA on tour, and he helped us back then. Very funny story. He played bass, although he also plays guitar, and he usually played only one note because most of the songs are on one key. And he jokingly complained about getting some inflammation in the nerve from playing only one note. But it was, we had great concerts around the world, more or less. We played in Australia. And did we play in Australia? Oh, that was Harmonia, sorry. We played in USA, in Turkey, and up and down Europe. And I'm right now, I have a... lack of memory. Maybe I played solo in Australia and with Harmonia, but not with Hallo Gallo. But anyway, coming to Barcelona, that was the second concert we played together in 2010. Before that, we were in Switzerland. They came to my place in Germany for a sort of rehearsal, very brief. And then we took a train to played on a festival called Billy Billy, I think. Yeah, small, very nice festival. But then I got sick, and I remember struggling in Barcelona. And I remember that the ATP people took such great care of me. It was wonderful. And they got me on my feet, and I could play. And I remember looking from the stage onto the water, like the Mediterranean, and there were sailing boats and people listening from the shore on their boats. That was a great memory.
And I'm just going to bring out there, hopefully, I really hope, sadly I have no re-say in this, but bring him back, that's what I'm saying.
Come back to Primavera?
Yeah.
I would do that any time, but back then I was invited by ATP. They had a stage because I played for ATP in America and in Britain and in Australia with Harmonia. And I don't know, I mean, I haven't followed so closely, but Primavera is a huge festival, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty big.
So I don't know, maybe they don't care so much about these extremists like Michael Rother.
I think so.
Well, then somebody should maybe plant the idea in their mind.
I'm planting it. You've got to eat lunch. We all got to eat lunch. But there's just a couple more things I want to ask about.
Okay, sure.
That's good. Firstly, I mean, you've worked with so many incredible people. Who was the person that most inspired you?
Oh, that's a tricky question. I'm not going to answer that truthfully. No. No, to be honest, I was so fortunate to really accidentally meet the Kraftwerk people. Florian Schneider was such an inspiring musician. And the whole thing started by me listening in the Kraftwerk studio, where I joined a guitar player who had an invitation. I didn't know them, and so he said, "Why don't you come along?" And I said, "Oh, or should I meet my girlfriend?" "Oh, okay, I'll come along." And then I was there, and I remember Florian Schneider and Klaus Dinger were just listening. They were sitting on a sofa, and Ralf Hütter was playing, and there was a Charlie Weiss was his name, a drummer playing. And I heard Ralf Hütter play and I thought, wait a minute, I can relate to that because, yeah, this is just down my alley. It's like the melodic approach to music because, as I said in the beginning, I had this crisis because I didn't know anyone who had similar idea of leaving behind American cliche music and British music. I was totally alone. And then meeting, hearing Ralf Hütter play those, my notes, yeah, I like them. I don't know, we have maybe some classical background common. My mother was a classically trained piano player. I never wanted to go down that road of having a training and knowing what you're not allowed to do according to classical training. I wanted the liberty to make all my own mistakes. And so the Kraftwerk people, Ralf Hütter, Florian Schneider, Klaus Dinger, then definitely Rödelius, Hans-Joachim Rödelius and Dieter Möbius, my Harmonia bandmates. Those were formative years. Then meeting Jackie Liebezeit, such an inspiring, great drummer. Working with Conny Plank, meeting Brian Eno was a very special occasion. He came to a Harmonia concert and we started talking, we were introduced, and we all thought, oh, he's so nice, he's so modest, he's a British gentleman. And he was like, we know all your music, David and I, we talk about your music, and yeah, but he was like not the the star, crazy star, which we had seen on TV or Roxy Music stuff. And working with him in our studio or sharing studio time and drinking tea and playing ping pong and going for walks. That was also very, I mean, the ideas circled, like they picked up some of our ideas. I think some of them really are very open about that. They make no secret that they were inspired. We definitely also liked Brian Eno's music and his solo works. And so those people, for my beginning, were, I guess, the most important. I hope I didn't forget anyone. But then in later years, of course, meeting John Frusciante, for instance, and playing with him and the Secret Machine guys, Benjamin Curtis, with whom I then also played concerts. And these people were all, unfortunately, he's also no longer with us. And Josh Klinghoffer, for instance, also a great musician. And he and John Frusciante and I, we played two concerts in San Francisco and Los Angeles. And the story goes on. But of course, the beginning, I think, left the deepest mark, because then I was still assembling the tools and the blocks for the idea where my music should go. And so I guess maybe that's the answer, this group of people.
So the last thing I want to ask is a bit of a strange one. I mean, I'm wearing a Stereolab t-shirt today, I just realized. And I actually, funnily enough, came across your music via Stereolab, who were and they've made no bones about this. They're very influenced by Noi. Are you a fan of theirs?
I like some of their songs. Oh yes, definitely. And of course, I also recognize. That's my nine. I would say, I'm sorry, boys. We played together at some point, and they picked up the idea, and I've heard this many times that it was a generation or two later, and they introduced our music, our idea of music. It's a different approach. And at the end, I mean, they took also elements, the repetition and the straight line and the nine, always the nine. I love the nine, the für immer nine, if you know. Yeah. And they, of course, helped us, like Sonic Youth, reach a new audience. And so the wheel started turning again in the 90s when people like Julian Cope wrote about us, at a time when in Germany you would have to bribe a journalist to write about us. And then suddenly, I remember clearly that there were these people who came and said, I can talk to my editor because we can claim, oh, Julian Cope, this famous musician, he is your fan. And that's a reason to write about you now. And so that helped us. And the re-release on Grönland Records of the Neu albums in 2001 in America, also Astralworks, and on a worldwide scale, that connected us to fans of these bands that were younger. It's funny because also Thurston Moore and I, we shared some stages. He played with us also. And when we first met, it was funny. He said, all of us always come back to Hallo Gallo.
Well, it's true, isn't it?
I don't know, but it's a nice thing to hear. Like, it was fun. And Stereolab, yes, they definitely carried the torch of some kind of element in our music to a new audience. And so no complaints there.
Well, look, it's been absolutely lovely speaking to you. It's definitely lunchtime.
Good.
So I don't want to keep you from lunch anymore, but thank you so much, and I'm looking forward to the gig tonight.
Yeah. Oh, is it tonight? Really? Oh, I have to focus. Thanks.
You're listening to Radio Primavera Sound, proudly presented by Cupra.